So what I'd like to do is, before we actually pick up on where we left off last week, and we'll review a little bit before we get into some of the sources that we're going to talk about tonight on Rov, I want to go back to a point which was addressed very briefly last week, really not nogeya directly to anything in the Gemara. In fact, it's really in response to a question that was asked, and my response at the time was, number one, I gave a drush on this once, and it really has nothing to do with what we're talking about now. But it was an interesting question. I think the thought was interesting, so I'll start off with that. I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think the question came from that direction. We had been talking about the number of dayanim that you need, 3, 5, 23, different numbers, and the concept of bez and shekel, and that even though the Torah says, according to one opinion, the Torah seems to only imply that you need 2 judges, but in bez and shekel, so we bump it up to 3. And someone asked the question, you know, it seems that there are many times where the Torah tells us specific numbers, but it really doesn't mean that number, it means one less. You know, so I think the individual asked that question was thinking maybe about when it comes to Malchus. The Torah tells us in Parshas Kisese that Arbaim Yakenu, that there are 40 Malchus that are given, but the Gemara in Malchus explains that actually it's 39. And the Gemara uses an example where you can see the Koach of Chazal, that they have the ability to go ahead and to change that, what it seems to say explicitly, the Ferris and the Pasuk. There are other examples of when we sometimes have a change, a shinoi of sorts, specifically when it comes to 40. When it comes to the 40 years in the Midbar, Yom Lashana, Yom Lashana, as the Torah tells us, so that was a punishment for the fact that they cried for 40 days, the Meraglim traveled for 40 days, and then they return, and the Klal Yisrael is devastated by the news, and so therefore they're going to have Yom HaShana. But we know that it really wasn't 40 years, that the Jews in the Midbar only died for 39 years, and in the 40th year they stopped dying. So even though it was supposed to be a Gzeira of 40 years, it really was only a Gzeira of 39. So even though the Torah says 40 Malchus, we know it's 39. And there's a Gzeira of 40 years in the Midbar, and it's only 39. Another interesting example, not very well known, is we all speak about the 40 days from Rosh Chodesh El until Yom Kippur. Right? We speak about the 40 days and the significance of 40 days and what happens over those 40 days. But if you do the math, it's actually not 49. It's 40 days. It's 39 because Elul is always 29 days. It was always a Chasim month. And so therefore, the question once again is, why is it that whenever we have 40, we seem to go down to 39? So a beautiful idea that I heard from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, he quotes a very nice mimer that's in the Sefer Mishnah of Aaron, or the Torahs of Aaron Kotler's Atzal, where he speaks about the significance of the number 40. The name of this particular mimer is called Skulat Hazman, the Mem Yom. And he speaks about the fact that the number 40 is a time of Hischadshus, it's a time of renewal. Matan Torah was 40 days because that is renewal. As soon as Hischadshus, the same idea of Yetzirah Havlad, the development of an Ubar, the first 40 days of pregnancy. So 40 is renewal. So he says when somebody doesn't have Eira, he gets Malchus. The idea of Malchus is to renew this person, to take him from the Rishus, from the evil place that he was at, in order to enable him to renew himself and to return once again to a state of Tzidkus. So that is the main reason why we have the number 40. And it's true. And on a certain level, he deserves 40 in order to be able to renew himself. However, there's also a concept that there's always a pintle yid, that no one is really all that bad. And even though it seems that he needs a full 40 malchus in order to restore himself, he needs a little less than that 40. So therefore, that's why we know through Torah Shabbat Peh that we bump it down a little bit, because nobody actually needs 40 malchus. The same is true, we said, during the Midbar, that it's true they needed 40 years of punishment. However, they didn't need really, because just like individuals have a pintle yid, all Klal Yisrael has a part of their neshamas that are all good. And so therefore, it ended up being only 39 years, not 40. The same is true of the 40 days of Elul. We speak about a time of complete hischadshus, to completely restore oneself from a year of sin. But we know again that that no one needs a complete resurrection, that nobody's completely spiritually dead at any point, and that's why it's always 40 chaser a little bit. So this had absolutely nothing to do with the topic whatsoever, other than somebody asked the question, and I was able to dig up my notes and remember where I spoke about this one, so it's a nice idea. Now we'll get back into Sanhedrin. So we've been discussing last week the concept of Ein holchin b'mamon acharov. Just to remind you, the Gemara Gimel Amid Beis, right before the two dots, on the second wide line on the page, said the following. There are Yeshaya Maisi Labakavachom and Medina Nefashos. Ma Dina Nefashos, the Chamiri, Amarachmana Zobasarach Ruba, Dina Mamanos Lakoshikin. Ryoshia rather says that what? If by Dina Nefashos, the Torah tells us that we follow a rove, Acher Rav Lahatos, and Tosos, remember, explains why it is that it would seem that Acher Rav Lahatos is talking about Dina Fashos, that certainly when it comes to Dina Mamanos, meaning that if you have three judges, and two of them reach a certain conclusion, they say that the Baal Din is Chayiv, and one of them says he's Pater, the Din is that he's going to be Chayiv. And even though, really, we have a rule of Ein Holchen B'Mamon Acher Rov, over here we say that we follow Rov, based on a Kavachomer from Dina Nefashos. That's what the Gemara said. So you may recall that we saw the Tosus over here, and as you saw on the sheet, Tosus and Basra ask a question. How exactly does this work? This would seem to go against a Gemara in several places. The Gemara that we took a look at was the Gemara in Bava Basra. This is source number 3. I'll review it very quickly outside. We saw this Gemara inside last week. The Gemara tells us that if a person sells a shor to his friend and it's discovered that the shor is a nagchon, which means the shor is a wild beast, is a shor muad, it's goring everybody, and so therefore it's quite a liability. And the guy had no idea that that's what he was getting himself into when he bought the shor. So Rav says it's a mekachtos. Rav says that he has a right to go ahead and demand a refund, that this was not a reasonable sale, because he did not realize when he bought the shor that he was getting a shor nadchon. Shmuel says no. Yachalom lo l'shchit machaytu lach. Shmuel says no. The guy can say, I didn't know that you were buying the shor to keep, to maintain, that you were going to use it for work, for plowing. I thought that you were going to buy it to shecht it right away. So what do you care if it's a shor nadchon, right? The meat tastes just the same. So you have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel whether or not we declare this a mekachtos, whether we say that this sale is invalid, or whether Shmuel says we allow the seller to insist that he assumed that it was being purchased for the meat. And then the Gemara says, well, why not see? This guy, what does he usually buy animals for? Does he usually buy it for work? Does he buy it for meat? And the Gemara says, we're talking about a case where he really buys both, so it's not really clear. And then the Gemara says, why not see how much money he paid? After all, you should be able to tell, depending on how much money, because people spend more for an animal that they're going to work than an animal that they could just go ahead and shech. The Gemara says, well, actually, we're talking about a time where the price of meat was so expensive that there was no way to tell by how much money he paid. Okay, and then in the end of the day, the Gemara at the conclusion says, Rav says it's a mekach ta'os. Why? Because basa rubas lina. Because we follow the majority. The majority of people in the world who purchase an ox do it for ruba l'raja. Both people who buy an ox, they do it because they want to work the animal in the fields for the plowing. That's the primary work, or the primary purpose that most people would have when they buy an ox. Shmuel says, kiyaglina basa ruba, but yisu ruba mamon alo. Shmuel says, no, that when it comes to mamon, when it comes to dini mamonos, we do not follow a rove. So even though it's true that we could say that most cases in the world where people buy a shor, this is what they have in mind, that's not enough when it comes to a matter of dina mamonos. When you have two people that are fighting over an issue relating to money, we don't follow rove. When do we follow rove? We follow, as the Gemara says, b'isura, by yisur v'heter, let's say cases of milk and meat. When you're dealing with cases, even of dina nefashos, we saw in the Gemara, we follow rove. But not when it comes to Dina Mamanos. So that was the Gemara. So I believe we saw Tosos inside, in source number 4. We may have not, actually. Did we see the Tosos last week? We may have not seen the Tosos. So let's take a look at it now. I'm going to assume that we did not. We'll learn it as if we're looking at it for the first time. This is source number 4 in the sheet. Tosos Zabakama, Tavchav Zayin in the days. Ask the following. Teva, Makam Ein Holchin. Why is it that the Gemara says, Ein Holchin B'mamon Acharov? Right? The Gemara doesn't actually use that very expression here in Bava Basra, but it's the same idea. That Shmuel says, when it comes to matters of mamonos, we do not follow the rove. So Tosfos says, why not? We should learn it based on the Kavachom, and lazy the Kavachom, and Medina Nefashos. Just as the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that's our Gemara, says, Rabbi Yoshia, Maishi, love a Kavachom, and Medina Nefashos. Uma Dina Nefashos, the Chamire, Amarach Manos, Yilvasaruba. Our Gemara says, Dina Nefashos, which is obviously Chamur, it's a more of a weighty matter. You're dealing with life and death issues, and yet, we know that sin is you follow the rove. Dine mamonos, when you're dealing with things that are far less significant in the big picture, dealing with issues having to pertain to people's property, it's an important issue, but it's not as important life and death. So we should say kavachomer, we should follow Rov. Vafilu ruba the leisik haman as lina b'dina fashas basa ruba. And Tan Toso says even when it comes to a Rov, the leisik haman, we explained last week, that means that we don't have the things before us that we can count. We're dealing more with generalities, statistics, not necessarily something that's discernible, something that's provable. Even when it comes to such a rove, we follow that when it comes to Dina Fashos, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin says later on. So if we follow rove when it comes to Dina Fashos, why do we not follow rove when it comes to Dina Mamos? So it says Tosos the following. V'yesh Loma, Zahasam Gabadayonim Shaini. He says when it comes to judges, it is different. The Chashiv Miyat Dithu Kamisha Eino. Tosos says the following. That when you're dealing with judges, and you have a panel of judges, and they don't all have the same opinion. So they deliberate, they have a discussion, and then at the end there's a disagreement, and they count heads, and they find that the majority rule one way, and the minority rule the other way. So Tosa says, by Dayanim, Chashiv Miyatuthu, the minority view is Kemisha Eino. It's like, how would you translate those words, Kemisha Eino? It's like it doesn't exist. We're going to have to explain what these words mean. We're going to translate them literally in that, but we'll have to talk about this. We can't say over there, which means we should just allow the money to stay where it is, whoever happens to be holding it at that moment, because the role of Bezdin is to rule, and if they rule accordingly, to remove the money. When it comes to other cases of mammon, we don't follow Rov. So what Tosus basically says, again, we're going to have to delve further in a moment, but what Tosus seems to be saying is that it's true we have a rule of Hein Hochen B'mammon Acharov, but that doesn't apply within the context of Bezdin. When it comes to judges, even though it's true that you may from time to time have a disagreement among the judges, and you may follow the majority, and that, of course, is Rov. In fact, we learn it from the very same words, Acharei Rav Nahatos, follow the majority, but that's not like the other types of Rov that we're talking about. So, for example, our Gemara there in Bava Basra, which it says, Rov Azlina, Ruba L'Rajazavni, that most people, when they buy an ox, most people in the world, they're going to buy it for the purpose of working it, that's a Rov that deals with the population. Such a Rov, according to the Gemara, we do not apply, we do not follow the halacha when it comes to dinim mamonos. However, when it comes to dealing with dayanim, we do. And again, what's Tosos' expression, Tosos' language is, because when you're dealing with dayanim, we see the miyut kamisha eino, as if it's not there. So what does that mean? What exactly does that mean? Why is it that when it comes to dinim mamonos in general, we don't follow the rov? We're not going to look at what happens in the majority of cases and use that as the basis to render a conclusion here. But when it comes to dayanim, that's an exception. We'll count heads, and we'll see how many rule in favor this way and that way, and we'll issue a ruling, a verdict accordingly. So what's the explanation for that? So any thoughts as to what Tosus may mean? Anybody have any ideas? Why is it that over here we say, and else, why not say that when it comes to the purchase of an ox, you should say the same thing? Since the majority of the people in the world buy an ox for the purpose of plowing, so we should say that we should view the minority of people who buy it for shechita as if they don't exist, as if there is no such minority. And based on that, so it's a slam dunk. Then this is a mekach tos. The guy who bought the ox should have an easy case. He says, no, he can say nobody in the world buys an animal for shechita. But we don't say that. But over here, when it comes to dayanim, we count. Two say chayiv, one say zakai, that's it. The din is chayiv, and we view that guy, Zakai, Kemisha Eino, as if he's not, like he doesn't exist. Like all of a sudden his opinion doesn't matter. And again, remember we're talking about a dayan mumfit, his position of course matters, his opinion matters, he's qualified, he's experienced, he's learned. So why is Tosafot say we view Kemisha Eino? What does that mean? So there are several different explanations to this, and it seems to me anyway, many of them sort of overlap. But, you know, some difference in terms of the way they're presented. I'm going to share with you several approaches tonight. But, you know, they all sort of, like I said, they're all you know, follow a very similar mahalas. The first one comes from the Sefer Shar Yosha of Shimon Shkup, and this is found in source number, it's not numbered, forget that. It's lower half of this page, right after source number 4. So, Rav Shkup begins by citing the Tosos that he's read, the Tosos Reish V'niyach, Kasul L'Tarits Kushi Hanal Ba'ufan Acher. And Tosos writes, the Hasam Gabadayonim, when it comes to judges, shiny that's different, the Choshuv Miyatutu Kemisha Eino. So this is our Tosos. Gam Divrehem Tzrichim Biur. Says Rav Shkup, this requires explanation. Masha Kosu, what Tosos writes, the Bedayonim, when it comes to judges, Hamiyot Kamisha Eino. What does that mean? The minority view is as if it's not there. And what they conclude, the Lekla Meimar Uchi Becheskas Mare, the Habezdin Mafkumine, that we can't say that the money should stay where it is because Bezdin removes it. What does that mean? Ukvar Niskashu B'divrayim Achronim. He says, I'm not the first one to ask this question. The Achronim have tried to understand it. And he says, take a look at the Kuntras HaSveikos Klau Vav. Maybe some comment of Rachum, there are several answers. He says, Valpidar Kenu, based on a certain approach that he has been developing, nearly Lefaresh Gam Dibri Atosos Elu, the Gam Lishitasa Muchach. He says, I'm going to explain it the following way. The Ikar HaYisod, the Lomahani Rova Mamon. What is the reason why the Gemara concludes, and this is the conclusion of the Gemara, that we do not follow a Rova when it comes to Mamon? Why is it that when two people have a dispute, and it's not clear, you know, who in fact should be awarded the money that they're disputing, why is it that we don't follow Rova? The reason is because Lomahani Rova Mamon, Lohotzi Miyad HaMuchzak, Mishum Chezkas Mamon, there is a basic rule when it comes to Jewish law, when it comes to money matters, and that is that if there's something that you have in your possession at any moment, you are considered in halacha to be what's called a muchzak, and the benefit of any doubt lies in your favor, by virtue of the fact that you are muchzak. That is a very, very strong position to have. So much so that if I have a watch on my hand that says, you know, it says, Dear Michael, you know, happy anniversary, and has your wife in there, and it says, Michael Stan, and I'm wearing it, and he says, excuse me, that's my watch. So actually, according to the halakh, if I acknowledge, I said, you're right, I stole it, then I don't have any case, but if I say, no, it's mine, you gave it to me, he said, why would I give you my watch, it's my anniversary, right, or you sold it to me. So even though my claim seems ludicrous, why would he give me his, you know, anniversary watch that was engraved to him? But the fact that it is my hands, and I am the muchzak, so that gives me, in this situation, that gives me the edge. And the only way that he will be able to legally take it back from me is if he brings proof that, in fact, I have it in my possession illegally. So we'd have to bring, let's say, Aiden that testified that they saw me steal it. Otherwise, the law will favor me, because he's the motzi and I'm the muchzak. Hamotzi mechavero, Alav Haraya. And that's the reason why he says we don't follow Rov. The Mamamon, when it comes to Mamonos, Adif Koach Zuchus Shalom Muchzak, the Koach, the strength and the merit of the Muchzak is so much greater. Shahasvar no senes, because it's really logical, Sheyishlot HaMuchzak V'davar HaMesupak, that the Muchzak should be able to maintain possession over whatever it is that he's holding, even if there's a doubt that arises regarding its true owner. Unless we could bring proof, either by way of witnesses or some other very compelling logical reason, that in fact it's not mine. And then Bezin has the power to say, excuse me, give him his watch back. When you have a situation where judges are sitting and they're deliberating a certain case and they argue, two of them say Reuven's guilty, he has to pay money, and one say, no, he's not, he doesn't have to pay money. So there really are two different ways to understand what's happening. One is to just appreciate the power, the authority of Bezdin. And the other thing is the quest, the search for the truth. You know, what's true and what's not true? What really happened here? Kshanadanim outside Habezdin, the road Machayvim v'Amiyat Tochim, when we look at it from this perspective that When Beis Din is down on a certain issue, when Beis Din gets together and they come to a conclusion, and the majority are mechayev, they say he's required to pay, and the miyut say he's not. And they say that, and they're actually being done on a person who right now is a muchzak. In this case, the laws of Beis Din, the way they operate, dictates that the minority view is overruled, is dismissed. And even though normally we don't follow a rov when it comes to mammon, zeshayech rachim novel lahachriya mitana emes loma shehukrapi an emes she'en mammon sheruven. When we say we don't follow a rov by mammon, that's if we're using rov, if we're looking at statistics as a way of determining what really happened. Right? We're going to say rov people in the world buy a shor for the purpose of plowing, and therefore that must be what happened here. That we don't do. Ein hochem b'mamon acharov means we cannot use a rov to determine what likely happened here. Aval in koch bezdin, but that's not what happens. When three judges sit and they're deciding what should be the din and they come to different conclusions and we count heads, that's the din Torah, hareze kechol hadinim sheba Torah. It's like every other din in the Torah. Does lino b'sa rov. The Torah says, you follow the majority view. B'huchra hadin shebatel mizeh koch bezdin shel hamiyut. The din is that the minority view is overruled, but who command the lesser? And it's as if that opinion doesn't exist. Amnam hasafek amiti ashenola raide machlukusam mihein kiven ala emes hine safek zelo hochrakum aide senesh batam in amir koch bezin. Now this is somewhat of a controversial statement. Rav Chaim says something a little later, maybe we won't see it, which seems to counter that argument, but he seems to be saying, even if it's true that they were not necessarily mechaving to the MS. And that may not be exactly what he's saying. But the point is that we're not declaring with certainty that the ruling that the Beis Din issues reflects necessarily what absolutely happened. At the end of the day, we don't really know what happened. So we're not saying that the rove, we're following the rove to determine what happened. We're just saying that the rove is being followed in order to execute the din. We should have said you don't follow, you don't take it away from the muksak in this case. But the reason why we do is because we're not following logic. It's not that the rov is dictating logic. They're not saying this is necessarily based on seichel or raya. This is our opinion, and we're going to give you our opinion. And based on that, the Torah says, "Achorim laham lahatos." And he says, "We're four lines from the top of the left column." Zeu kavanas atosos. That's what Tosos means when they say the Hamid v'dayonim command the lesser. That when dealing with judges, the minority view is just like it's not there. Dim lokein, because if we're not to that, kishabayim lahotzim yara muksak. Because when we come to take money from the person who has it in his possession, he shouldn't have to follow them. The Yeshua Mi'in Ma'azakeyu, because he can say there's a minority that follows me, and we don't follow a rove when it comes to Mamonos. However, when it comes to the power of Bezdin, there it also says he doesn't have a miyot that's helping him, because that's what happens in Bezdin. One, the minority view is completely completely eliminated. It is completely absorbed. It is completely, washed away, by the majority view. It is possible. There's a doubt in our mind. Maybe they ruled incorrectly. We're not determining with certain what actually happened here, and it could be that the Musak was really the one who was in the right. But he still has to follow what Bezin says. Even though it's true, maybe they made a mistake. As long as that has not been proven, as long as there has not been an appeals process which has determined that the Beis Din was an error, so then that's the rule. The rule is, he has to follow them. Gam b'mamu. So So that's the explanation of Shimon Shkab explaining the words of Tosfos. That Tosfos basically say it's true. Generally speaking, when it comes to Mamonos, we don't follow Rov. What the Gemara means over here in our Gemara, when it says that just like by Dina Nefashos, we follow the Rov of Dayanim. So Kavachom, Dina Mamonos, that's only when it comes to Din, when it comes to Dayanim, when it comes to judges. When it comes to judges, we view the minority command the lesser, as Tosfos says, like that view doesn't exist. What are your thoughts on that? Yeah? So not necessarily. So we see... What? Right. Right. So first of all, you're assuming, which is a fair assumption, but it's not necessarily correct, that Bittul is necessarily working, is a sort of the same mechanism as Rov. It's not necessarily, but let's assume for a moment that you're correct. So we could say that sometimes that is what happens, that we view the Miut like it does not exist, but we can't, when you're dealing with like a Rov, like the Gemara speaks about over here, that Ruba... Ruba Laraj is happening. We can't state that the Matzias is such that no one buys a shor for meat. We know that that's not so. Yet the Gemara, at least according to Rav is applying the principle of Rov over there. That's called a Rov. The majority of the people act this way. So you're right. Sometimes it will be as if it doesn't exist. And sometimes we wouldn't necessarily say such a thing. If you turn over the page from the Sefer Rishimo Shiurim, these are from the drushes of Reichman Rotsav, the drushes of the Rav Zatzal. So you'll find several insights into this process, which may, even though it doesn't quote the Shari Yosher, may actually, I think, sort of enhance our understanding, appreciation of what the Rav Shkaf is saying. So he quotes Tosos, we're on the right column, and then look at the letter Aleph. He says, a Graf Zatzal, that's a Rav Chaim, Bier, this is going to sound very similar. It's actually on the next page that I'll make it out to you tonight. The Rav Chaim explains, Shoharas Bezdin, Yotzeis Mikola Bezdin, Biyachad Kechepse Echad. Rav Chaim, took this idea a little further. And he said that when Bezdin issues a ruling, it's one unified statement, and their ruling is viewed, uses, that very familiar brisket terminology, Kechepse Echad. Now, Kechepse over here doesn't mean an object, but it means it's one entity. Hadin the Azlina Vasaruba Bahachras Haras Hadayanim, the din that we follow a rove when it comes to judges and their rulings, Koveya, that establishes Shahachras Harov Hi Apsaksha Kola Bezin, Velosha Rov Hadayanim Bavad. What happens through that process is when we follow the majority, so the psak that is generated from that Bezin is a psak that is being issued by the entire Bezin, not just the Rov who represent that particular view. Bigmar Hadin, by the time Bigmar Din, the verdict is issued, Af Miut Dayanim Shehisnagdu Lahora, even those minority of judges who were opposed to this particular ruling, Mitstaref Lerov, they join with the majority, Vapsak Yotzi Mikola Dayanim Ke'echad. And the Psak follows all of them. By the way, he doesn't say this over here, but what comes to mind is something that we saw a couple of weeks ago. It's not necessarily a Raya. Actually, what I'm saying may be completely wrong, but you do remember that we learned that if you have two Dayanim who rule one way, and one says Eni Yodeya, so what's the Riddin? We bring in another judge. So we gave another explanation for that. We said that maybe there was something missing in the deliberation. If they didn't have somebody, you have to have three people who really have an opinion. But it sort of comes to mind right now. That if a person says, I don't know, so obviously a psak of I don't know cannot be mitzar of the others. But a psak of I disagree with you, I come to a different conclusion, can. Huke'en halacha betaroves. Shemiu ta isu bata barove heter. Very good, Paul. Right? So it's the same idea, using that same analogy. Hu adid bebezdin, das miu ta dayonim betelu vadat harov, v'chol ha-bezdin b'yachad, ke'echad gomer ha-sadin. And the entire bezdin together. V'chein ein zeh nogeh l'sugin ha-medaberes barov da'alma v'chutz ha-bezdin. That's why it doesn't apply. He's quoting a Gemara in Bava Kamma. We didn't see that Gemara, but when it comes to other Gemaras which say that we don't follow a rove, when it comes to Dini Mamonos, that's talking outside of Bezdin. Outside of Bezdin, we don't do that. As long as there's some other possibility to consider. Right, similar to what Rav Shkap says, that as long as there's a possibility for another scenario over here, we rule in favor of the muchzak, because the power of chazak, of possession, in the Dimamanus is very powerful. But we don't apply that when it comes to Bezdin. Now look at the raya that he brings. It's beautiful. He says, raya lehagrach zatzal, hevi hagon Rav Moshe zatzal. This is the Rav's father, Rav Chaim's son, brought the following raya. The Hagemara b'Sanhedrin, later on we'll see a Gemara, hamasika sheshnei dayanim shechriya haraz Bezdin b'ta'os, v'shalbim shtei chalachim shelehefseh. Let's say you have two dayanim who ruled incorrectly, and they have to pay for the loss that was incurred by the Baal Din. So how much do they pay? They pay 2/3 of the loss. Mishab v'shtei chalokim shal hefsid. V'ilu adayin ashlishi shalota, the third dayin who actually ruled correctly, but he was overruled, he doesn't pay. V'hayu v'miyot patim l'shal nischalko, he doesn't pay. Ilu rak shnei hadayanim hayachrayim. So he says, wait a second. If there were only two dayanim who made a mistake over here, and they're responsible for the error in judgment, really what should happen is they should split it. So if let's say the ruling was $100, and there were three judges, two of them ruled incorrectly, one ruled correctly, so the guy who ruled correctly, he goes home. Those two, they're going to have to split $50. That's not what we do. We divide into three, right? So it's not a great number, forgive me, right? $33.33. So one dayan pays $33.33, the other one pays $33.33, and then pays nothing. So we see from here, said Rav Moshe, is you see that third dayan, even though he disagreed, his psak is part of the ultimate ruling. Shigamru sadin. V'lachem chilek shlishi shel hamamon b'achrei yusol levado. The remaining third really is his achrayus. Okay, for some technicality, because he technically wasn't wrong, so he doesn't have to pay. But really, he contributed to the psak. Od simuchin lakach niton lemtsov lashon shtar bezdin. Another raya for this. What is the lashon that is written on the shtar bezdin? Similar to Parpruz, we'll find the same lashon. B'mosav tflasa kichada havina. Right, which means the three of us were sitting here in a session of three. Kechada havina, we were like one. Milas kechada, so the lama shekol shlosh dayani bezdin mitstar from biyachad lachativa achas al bezdin aposekas adin. So they all join together and they become one united panel that executes the din. And so that's maybe what Tosos means over here when they say that by dayanim we view the miyot kemisha eno, because they all become sort of blended into one. Another way of approaching this or understanding this, he writes briefly in the second O space, the left column, Harov v'bezdin chal kidei lifsok halacha v'lo lahotzi l'maisa tamamon midei baladin. This is very similar also to what we saw in Rav Shkap, maybe a little similar to understand the way it's written over here. What is the purpose of a bezdin? The purpose of a bezdin is not to establish, I mean, this is somewhat of a controversial statement, you may argue, but he says that the role of a bezdin is not to necessarily determine what happens, but who is in fact right or wrong. It's to determine what the halach is, right? The dayanim hear the arguments, they consider the evidence, they listen to the testimony, they take all that in, and then they plug it in. It's a computation of sorts. That's their role, to paskin the halacha. Rak acharei shehoru bezdin halacha l'shma, after they do this, and they do it properly, chal gmar din l'chayiv es aval mamon. So the results of that is that now generates a consequence that may require, you know, one of the Baal Dinim to pay the other. Ein shaychut bein cheskas hamuchzak l'ras halacha l'shma bein achras harov v'bezdin b'nigod l'cheskas hamuchzak. Over here, we don't view the ruling of Bezdin as being sort of a clash, in a sense, a force that's competing with his status of a muchzak. Your status as a muchzak is only relevant kol zman, there's no clear established halach against you. But once Bezin rules a certain way, and the halacha now determines that you need to pay him, you now lose that status of a muchzak. The robe that's mentioned in our Gemara, that robe is for the purpose of considering who's right and who's wrong, whose argument sounds more, you know, credible. That's when we say we do not consider rov when it comes to the mamon. So fishi yesh miurim and starve chaskas mamon. So ein holchem mochem acharov. But when it comes to the bezdin, when they deliberate and come to a conclusion, they're paskening the halacha. The Torah says you follow the majority. That's the halacha. And once that's the halacha, the chips fall. However they do. And if one guy has to pay the other, he's no longer considered to be al pidin. He's no longer considered to be the muksa. You know, again, to me, all these ideas sound similar in some ways, but you know, they're being expressed, you know, very differently, you know, because, you know, people who are brilliant and have precision of speech can do that. The third idea over here, also, I think sort of, you know, one idea sort of flows into next. Yerushalma shedin rov shebegemara shalanu chal kimivarim v'lchein ein mol kinetic chazaka. Another way of expressing this is that the rov in our gemara, generally, when we speak about rov, that is coming for the purpose of being mivarim, which means to clarify what happened, and therefore it is no match for a chazaka. The ilu arov bebezin ilchal kemivarer, it clearly is not coming as a mivarer. Sharei kaimalon elu v'elu divul kim chayim. That's an interesting point, right? What does it mean elu v'elu divul kim chayim? Famous statement of Gemara in Erevin. That means a what? That you can have the possibility for multiple truths within halacha. You can have a situation where one dayan rules one way, another one rules the other way, and they can be complete opposites. Chay zakai. Aser Mutter, you know, Tamei Tar, and it is possible within the realm of Divul Kim Chaim that they could both be considered MS. So we are therefore not looking at these two Dayanim who come to one conclusion as if they are now being Mevarer the truth and the other one is wrong. El Chal Kikoveh Shal Psak HaDin. Rather, that rove is coming as a way of determining what the din should be. When we look at rov as coming to be a mevarer, so then we consider the miut as well as being a mevarer, and that's why he can join with the chazaka. So, again, in my mind, all of these ideas they definitely have their own unique features, but they're all sort of similar in one general respect, and that is that a major point of differentiation based on what Tosfos seems to be saying, between a rov by Bezdin and the other types of rovs that we're talking about, a rov by Bezdin is coming as part of a process of establishing the halacha of Psak Din, and in that case, the procedure is such that when we come to a conclusion, the majority conclusion is the one that is considered to be the final ruling of Bezdin, and that's it. It is like a rov in some respects, as Rishkov said, but it's not operating like the regular din of rov, which is coming either to be bevarer, to give us some insight into what may have happened over here, in which case we don't follow that by rov. Yeah? Right. So we'll see later on, the general rules, it's a Mishnah later on, but the general rule is when it comes to what's called a tub in Dvar Mishnah. In other words, if they make a mistake by something that is an explicit din, if their error was, what we call that, maybe like gross negligence, or it was clear legal malpractice, right? There was a major, major error, not necessarily in terms of their assessment, not in terms of their leaning, but clearly they were in error because they failed to remember or to properly understand, Befer's din. So that's where they are subject to this, sort of appeal process, and the ruling can be overturned, and actually they can be held responsible for losses that were caused as a result of their ruling. But otherwise, generally speaking, the dayan is going to be putter from losses that were caused, even if, a case could be made later that there was a mistake in the judgment. So it would have to be tav dvar mishnah, but that's subject of a whole sugya later on in the Masechus. Well, it is true that, I don't want to oversimplify things. We definitely didn't say, it hasn't come up yet. We have certainly not claimed that the Dayanim are infallible. We never claimed that they are, that they are somehow immortal or not possibly subject to failure on any level. Certainly that's not the case. It is true And Rav Shkap did say this, that while it is true that it's possible that they made a mistake, until we know that, so then we follow the protocol. The protocol is, you know, we listen to the Beis Din. If we determine later, if we find out later that a mistake was made, so we can come back and look at it and decide what to do then. But right now we're living in the moment, and the moment this is the halacha. You know, there always has to be the way. Yeah. I mean, don't we say this to our kids sometimes, or you know, or grandkids, or right? We sometimes you know, could it be that sometimes parents or grandparents are wrong? It could sometimes be wrong, but that's the right of the parents to say this is the way it's going to be. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But
if they were disproven,
yeah.
Can they continue to be
diamond? Again, definitely. I'm not at the moment prepared to answer that question completely intelligently. If there's reason, making a mistake would not be an automatic reason to disqualify a dayan. There are other things that could disqualify a dayan, and I suppose if this was recurring, and it may be a sign of the problem. I remember years ago, there was a situation where somebody, a whole group of people were claiming that one of the dayanim on a very, very well-known Beis Din was showing signs of dementia. And I guess there were people trying to protect him or maybe in denial and stuff like that. It's obviously a very serious problem. But that's, you know, that's an unusual situation. But the fact that a dayan makes a mistake doesn't mean that he's going to be, that he's going to lose his post as a dayan. Okay. Yeah.
So it seems like there's a lot of attention spent on, you know, the answering on the reason why the Beis Din shouldn't be go after the row, but we don't consider going after the row, why that's fine, why it's acceptable. But for the case of the ox itself, the, you know, found the statistical, that's explained in by
is there additional explanation? In other words, what he's basically saying is that's a role in like Matthias. That's like just if you take a poll, you know, the statistics lean in a certain direction. So that's one very popular type of role. You know, we hear these things all the time. Like 90% of statistics are made up. You ever hear that one? Right. Right, correct. So that's the type of rove, that's the most common type of rove, and that's the type of rove that we are actually saying doesn't apply when it comes to a case of Dine Maminus. Then the Much, whoever is the possessor of whatever it is that's being disputed, he remains the possessor. He remains the muksak. Ad shemotzi right until we bring a raya. Hamotzi machaveh lav raya. You have to bring a proof, which is strong enough to take it from the muksak. I told you the story before. I'm not going to tell you the whole story again because I've told the story before. But years ago, when I was selected for a jury, and I've confessed this sin so many times publicly in the past. You know, I had somewhere else to be, and it was going to be a 2-week trial. And I really, really didn't want to get stuck there. So rather than lying and saying that I was once involved in some violent crime and getting to walk, you know, free like everybody else, I couldn't bring myself to do that. So I thought I would reason with the lawyers and explain to them why I didn't think I was fit. And I was actually teaching Bava Kama that year. This is when I was teaching Bava Kama at MTA. This was 1998, so the story goes back a little bit. And I told the lawyers that I thought it would be difficult for me to be a juror because I teach Bava Kama and I teach Jewish law. And it's confusing for me to go ahead. So he said, no, you know, we'll explain to you this and that. Anyway, he said, it's all the same. Jewish law is all... He said, like, American law is based on, you know, biblical law. So I said, no, there are differences. So he says, what's the difference? So I used this as an example. I said, but in Jewish law, we have a rule that hamotzi mechaveh lav raya. But in secular law, I think they say, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt doesn't work, according to that law. Beyond a reasonable doubt is not enough. We cannot take the money from the muksak unless you bring a raya. So I thought I had him until one of them said, what are you talking about? My boss is a frum Jew. He learns Daf Yomi, and he tells us the reason why he's the best lawyer around is because he studies the Talmud. He said, you'd be the best juror here. So that didn't work. But they let me go in the end. But I was not able to convince them, but I used this as an example off the top of my head. You know, this is an unusual concept. You know, it's not enough to prove beyond a reasonable doubt when it comes to mamonis. You know, need more than that. And what's really remarkable when you think about the implications of this is that when it comes to dina nefashos, we do follow a rov. When it comes to matters of life and death, reasonable doubt may be enough. But because there's no, we don't have the same concept of a muhsak, even though you can ask why. You know, a person's a muhsak on his life, right? You know, but the concept of a muhsak as applies by mamon is very powerful, right? Right now, I have possession of whatever it is that's being disputed, and the law automatically favors me unless there's absolute proof otherwise. Yeah.
But there's also the law that says possession is 9/10 of the law, right?
But that's not our law.
But I'm saying, is this a similar concept? Because here it's saying, whoever's having, is in possession of the animal.
Yeah, everybody agrees.
He keeps the possession. Unless,
right, true. I mean, everybody agrees that when you're a muhsak, that counts for a lot. I mean, it would work that way here as well. You know, if I'm sued, you know, the fact that I'm a muhsak gives me an edge. The question is how much. So here we're saying it really, even a very, very strong rove would not be enough to. You know, so case in point over here, the guy bought an ox. He goes the next day to refund it. He says, well, look, why would you think I bought it for shmita? Ask 100 people in the street. 90 are going to tell you that they buy an animal for plowing. But the halacha follows Shmuel. Ein halchim b'mamon acharov. You know, you should have clarified this before you bought the animal. Now you're stuck with it. I mean, that's very, you know, that's very powerful. What? No, 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 no. All right, so what I want to do with the time remaining, I don't want to give you the sheet. I don't want to come back to the sheet next week, because I do want to go on to the Gemara next week. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip most of what's on this page. Again, you're free to take a look if you want. But what I want to skip is all the way to the Shev Shmais on the next page. And the background to this, before we take a look at it inside, is our Tosos, which I know that we did see last week. Today we've been talking about Tosos in Bava Basra. Oh, I'm sorry, Bava Kama. On Daf Chav Zayin. But the Tosos over here, on our Amud, Sanhedrin Daf Gimel Amud Beis, said something different last week, you may remember. Tosos starts off with the same question. Why is it that the Gemara in Bava Basra says, Ein Holchem B'mamon Acharov, and here it says, we do follow Rov. So Tosos says something very, very cryptic over here. Tosos says, Asarach Lomar, the ruba l'radya zavne lo chashiv ki hanach ruba tilchach lo samchina nahach ruba v'dinim mamonis. Tosos says something which some argue is actually the same as they're saying in Bava Kama, but it doesn't seem that way. Tosos says there's something very different about the rov l'radya zavne. Remember, the Gemara in Bava Basra said that the rov that most people buy an animal for the purpose of plowing with it, that's a different type of a rov. But Tosos don't say why it's different. They just say it must be different than this. But what does that mean for us? So obviously there's a lot of discussion on this also. How is it different? So I want to share with you a very interesting approach from the Shev Shmaisa, which is on the second side of this page. I actually, as you can see, that there are numbers in the margin. So this is right around number 35, right above Shev Shmaisa. Kaimelon, we follow the rule, Ein Hochem B'mamon Acharov. As the Gemara says in the beginning of Perakim Eniach and Bava Kama, Uber Reish Perak Hamocha Peros Itmar, and quotes the Gemara Hamocha Shor L'Chaverov, and then to you buy a shore, and it turns out that it's a goring shore. So Rav says Mekachos, and Shmuel says no, and in the end the conclusion of the Gemara is we don't follow the rov. And then he quotes our Tosos, who asks, you know, why not? After all, the Gemara over here says if you follow rov by nefashos, kavachomer by dinim mamonos. And then he quotes Tosos' answer. Second to last line on this paragraph, line 40, the Tzarech Lomar, the Ruba L'Radya Zavni L'Chashib Kihanach Ruba, that this robe is somehow different. The Tzarech Biur, the Masha Kassel Tosos, the Ruba L'Radya L'Chashib, L'Chashib Me'ezatam, L'Chashib Ruba Kihanach Ruba. What does that mean? That this robe is different. How is it different? So this is a different approach than what we've been talking about until now. It's a different approach because it's really a different question. Until now we've been trying to explain Tosos in Bava Kama, which stated one answer. Assuming that this is a different answer, it's coming from a different angle. Tosfos here says the rove of Ruba L'Radya Zavni is a different type of rove. What does that mean? So he writes the following: V'niru l'faresh l'fi mashakasav Ramban b'sefer amachamos perik beiz kedushim. Midapi arif gabi savlonos. What are savlonos? Savlonos are gifts that were commonly given from a man to a woman at the time of engagement, the time that they were dating, courting each other. And there's a question, when a man gives these gifts to a woman, whether or not he gives it to her l'shem kiddushin. Right? You may be familiar, if I'm not mistaken, it's a din in, it's brought down in the Mishnah Berurah, I think, that by when it comes to Mishloach Manos, right, you should be careful not to, man shouldn't give Mishloach Manos directly to a single woman, right, because maybe seen in Sablon, there's such a din, right, so, sounds like a strange idea, right, but, you know, giving a gift to a woman's dam, you have to know what the context of that is. It could be maybe it's sometimes a Safek Kiddushin. So he quotes the Ramban. It says, "Gabi Sadlonos da Amrinon deruva mesavle v'hadem mekadishim." Most people, they give these gifts and then they mekadish them later. Hikshu bazeh kevav deruva mesavle v'hadem mekadishim amai choshesim lasadlonos. So b'chol zuchta l'zem basaruba. So they say, well, if most people, when they give gifts, these little gifts before erusin, are not giving it l'shem kiddushin, so why do you have to assume that maybe this gift will give l'shem kiddushin? We always follow the rule. So you should follow the rule here as well. And you should say that most people, they give, they give their, the person they're dating a gift to before they actually give them the ring to marry them. Like we call the engagement ring. That's like a sablonos. The cost of Allah of Ramban, about a tam l'shele zusha in a rov zeh, dama l'putzit d'rabei v'chachomim. Why is it, he says, that this rov, about a tam l'shele zusha in a rov zeh, excuse me, this rov is not like the machlokas of Remeir and the Chachamim. The Remeir and the Chachamim and the machlokas, whether you follow Rov or not. Remeir and Chachamim. The Hasam, he says, Rov Chiyuv V'Tevahu. The Rov that Remeir and the Chachamim were talking about is what he calls a Rov Chiyuv V'Tevah. How would you translate Rov Chiyuv? Rov Chiyuv does mean it's an obligation. Rov Chiyuv means it's certain. It must happen, or as he says, it's natural. V'Ef Shar Elokein. There are certain things in the world that are based on the Metzius, the majority of cases in the world, go this way. Avakan einu ala minhag. But over here, when we say that a man is mekadesh a woman, normally he'll give her gifts beforehand, that's just the way people act. Upamim harbeish adam noag him minhag hamiut. And there are times that any person can choose, you know what? This time I'm going to go ahead and give a gift l'shem kiddushin. Hilkach b'makum isurei shesish echmiru l'chush. Therefore, says Ramban, since we're dealing over here with a very potentially very serious issue of Eishas Ish, so therefore, we're going to be Chayish Lemi'uta. What exactly is the Ramban saying? So Ramban seems to be saying the following, and that is, again, there are many different types of robes. We've touched on that right tonight, but now we're introduced to another consideration over here. And that is there's a robe in Metzius, what he calls a robe Chiyu V'teva, which means, somebody give an example of a robe Chiyu V'teva, a natural robe. The majority of people grow up to be healthy people who are fertile, not infertile. So the Gemara says later on, you can have Kiddushin, let's say, I don't know how much we're going to get, but Ritva quotes Ramban, has an idea over here that maybe if you have a katan, a katanish, a chotan, a yabnin, below chashin and lusris for islandists. We don't assume that the children are going to grow up and it'll turn out that they'll be sterile. Why not? Because the chiyuv v'teva, the rov chiyuv v'teva, the majority of people in the world don't develop that way. The majority of people actually develop to be healthy, fertile people who can have children. It's true there are exceptions, but those are very much the rare exceptions. Nobody can step out of that rov by choice. That's one's fate. And the overwhelming majority of people in the world go in one direction. That's called the rov chiyuv v'teva, using the words of the Ramban. The Sheikh Shmaisus wants to say that this, what Tosfos is saying over here, is that the rove of Ruba le Rajazavni is a different type of rove. Most people in the world, when they buy a shore, they buy it for plowing. That may be true, and that may be true all throughout history. But the fact of the matter is that each person, when he goes and buys a shore, he can decide for himself, what am I going to do? So over there, we don't necessarily look at that rove quite the same way that we look at a rove that is necessary, that is built into nature, that that's the way it has to be, as opposed to a rove which just follows a statistical likelihood of the way most people act. Whenever it has to do with the way people act, We don't view that quite as strong as a rov. It's a fascinating idea.
Yeah, but in the first example he gave with the Arison, he said v'chosh yishlamiyah because it's such a
he threw that in
issue.
Because of the fact that there's an israishus ish, we're not going to rely on a rov, which to begin with is somewhat of a weak rov.
But here we're going to have that kind of
because in general we do rely on rov when it comes to other cases of ishus ish. We don't have a general rule that we never rely on rov when it comes to matters of.
I'm saying here with the yachts.
No, but that's a behavioral rove. I mean, now that's the same. That fits that same pattern. It's just like the savlonos. It's a rove which reflects human behavior.
But what he said was that the reason why, you know, it's a different kind of rove, and because it's a different kind of rove, and because it's such an important inyan, so we're choshesh l'mir. This isn't such an important inyan that we should be choshesh l'mir.
Which is not important? But it is. It's the Imamnes. It's the Imamnes. No, so no, Tosos, according to this approach, Tosos says that we don't, there may be times that we would follow a rove, if it's a very strong rove by the Imamnes. I think that, but not when it comes to something like Ruva, Ruva Lerad Zavni. Most people buy an ox for the purpose of plowing. That type of rove is not strong enough to stand up against the Mukhzak. But maybe if it was a rov chiyuv v'teva, we would. I mean, that seems to be the implication. So he develops this a little more in the lines that follow. But that's his idea. So again, basically, we find Tosos in Bava Kamma and Tosos over here ask basically the same question, and that is why is that we don't follow a rov by Dini Mamanis? After all, the Gemara seems to say over here that we do. So Tosos in Bava Kamma says, well, when it comes to Bezdin, it's completely different. When it comes to Bezdin, that's not a regular rov. We view the miyat kamida eno, as you said, maybe like we view milk in the cholent. It's bata barov, and it's like it doesn't exist. You can eat the entire cholent, and we saw a lot to support that particular approach. Tosos over here, however, focuses on the rove, that particular rove that's being discussed over there in the Gemara Bavasra, and says that that's somewhat of a different rove. Tosos doesn't say it's a shvach rove, but he says it's a different rove. Why is it different? So the Shemaisa suggests that maybe it's different because it is... it's a behavioral rove. It's a rove that follows not nature, but it follows what most people do. And when you're following rove, things that most people do, so we always have to be concerned that at any given point someone could step away from that. And someone could say, you know what, today I'm in the mood to go ahead and buy a shor for me. Because it's up to him. You know, he makes a choice for himself. Even though the statistics don't change, even though the majority of people still act in this way, you know, we view that rove differently, and it doesn't have the same power of a rove which really reflects, you know, a sort of reality, what he calls a rove of teva, which is not really subject to human input.
So why don't we say the same thing in the Dharam?
Say what same thing?
That, because in the Dharam, when somebody says something, so we assume that generally means what most people say.
That's a different rule, that we follow Lashon B'nei Adam. No, I think that's a little different. I don't think it's based on rove. Lashon B'nei Adam is what did the guy say? So the way we determine what he said is what most people mean when they say that. It sounds like, listen, all these ideas are, you know, obviously overlap in many ways. Okay, Shkar, thank you.